listeners.
Time for an awakening. Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforawakening.com, which is the website, and listen to the live stream there. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening, and listen to the live stream from that location. Or you can go to TuneIn or download TuneIn to any of your devices. TuneIn is a free app, and on your desktop and tablet, you can just log in to TuneIn. And in that search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon where you can listen to the program streaming live. You can even stream it into your car. That's Time for Awakening with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. You can also hit us up on Facebook. Time for Awakening has a fan page on Facebook, and that search engine. Just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And also Time for Awakening Media is out there and has been launched. It should be one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. There you'll see more interesting content, podcasts, other programs, other articles. And the podcast you can download, listen at a later time, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for Awakening Media. Tonight, we're scheduled to have a special guest join us. Activist and author, Mr. Mitchell Chance, will be with us to discuss his book, The Great Hijack, The Stealing of the Black Talented Tenth Through a System of Self-Hate. Should be interesting discussion this evening with our scheduled guests. We'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our special guest this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist, tour guide at the African American History Museum in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch. Brother Richard is with us on the line. Brother Richard.
Can you hear me, Ellen?
Yes, sir.
I'm having a little technical problem.
Is there echo? Go ahead.
Yeah, that's better. I'm
no,
here.
You are.
I think we got a temporary okay with this.
Yeah, you're okay.
I apologize for my inconsistency, but it seemed like something went down with the equipment. But I'm definitely looking forward to hearing Brother Chance and developing his his new book that he just came out with. So I'm looking forward to that discussion.
Tonight, we have a special guest joining us, activist, author, Philadelphia native, Brother Mitchell Chance is with us. The title of the book, The Great Hijack, The Stealing of the Black Talented Tenth Through a System of Self-Hate. I want to welcome to Time for Awakening, Mr. Mitchell Chance. Brother Chance, how are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here on Time for Awakening with myself and Brother Richard.
How you doing there, Brother Chance?
I'm doing all right. Great.
You know, Brother Chance, let's get right into it. This is the fifth book that you've written, yeah. And it seems to be a common theme with a lot of your books, the upliftment of our people. Talk about what led you to this fifth book and the title, The Great Hijack, The Stealing of the Black Talented Tenth Through a System of Self-Hate. What led you to speak about this particular subject?
This is the only book that really was spawned by the people. I do a lot of videos breaking down a lot of different subjects. And maybe two and a half years ago, I had a lot of people reaching out to me, asking me to talk about self-hate, you know, talk about why black people hate themselves or appear to hate themselves, why we hold each other down and why we don't help each other. And I don't like to speak on anything that I have researched, you know. So as I begin to continually get this request over and over again, I said, well, maybe this is something that the people really want to understand. At the time, I had no idea I was going to go into what it is that I found. I had no idea I was going to be breaking down a system with goals and working parts and all of that. I was just trying to figure out, you know, why black people feel the way they feel about each other. So after that, I continually received that question. Around the time, we start seeing a lot of comments from Stacey Dash, from Charles Payne, from Sheriff David Clark, Don Lemon, And as I'm looking at them, I'm thinking to myself, you know, what is it that's making, you know, these people who are in pretty good positions, why are they saying some of the things that they're saying about their own people? So I just started digging in history. I was reading everything that I could to see what has transpired in the past. You know, it's very, I believe it's easy to figure out what's going on when you just look at what's happened and what the effects of what happened have been. And I don't think we do that enough to look at, you know, we'll see something happen, but nobody ever pays attention to what it affected, how that trickled down, how that created mindsets, how that shifted the culture, how that changed the way people viewed or looked at themselves. So from that, I was just looking at everything from us being enslaved up to us freeing ourselves, which is one of the things I deal with in the book, is because they conditioned us to think that Lincoln freed us. When Lincoln didn't free one slave, that's propaganda to make us continue to believe that we are less than. So they labeled us freed men, which would signify that other people had freed us, but we were not powerful enough to free ourselves, which is something that's used in the educational part of the system of self-hate to make us feel like this, we're, you know, we're nothing. They never teach us about the Gullah Warriors or any of our revolutionary heroes who fought from the time that we were kidnapped and brought here until we freed ourselves, until it was not beneficial enough for them to continue fighting us for those kind of things. So I might be going a little too far into the book. So, you know, that's you know, what drove me to write it, because if people wanted to know why it seemed as if Black people hated themselves, looked at themselves as inferior. And as I began to study, I uncovered a system, something that I have yet to, I think I'm the first person to actually talk about self-hate as a system and actually give a goal to what the system of self-hate is for.
You know, I do agree with you. I think that you're the first that I ran across that equated the use of the talented 10th into this system of self-hate. And I want to go, and we'll go into that as we keep on talking. But you start out the first chapter with a quote by Marcus Garvey. And before you talk about that quote in relation to the first chapter, in your opinion, you know, I think, you know, I start out the program always quoting a Bible verse that says our people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. Do you think, and this is almost a rhetorical question, but I just want to get you to talk about it. Do you think that our people recognize that we have been placed or strategically placed in the situation that we find ourselves in now here in 2017? Do you think any of this, do they believe that any of these things have been socially engineered for us, or we just find ourselves in an unfortunate circumstance? Talk about it from your perspective.
I think the dichotomy is we have people who know for sure that this has been socially engineered, and then we have people who are what I call victims of self-hate, those who have been brainwashed and conditioned to just view us as just genetically inferior and think that, well, this is just, you know, us, is everything is our fault, and we just didn't do this, and we just didn't do that, and that's why we're here. The past couple of weeks, I've been posting videos of scientific experiments with animals. I posted one that had to do with rats, one that had to do with monkeys, and the comments showed me overwhelmingly a majority of the people who are commenting, and I'm talking about, I don't know how many comments, like 1,000 comments on each post, the people are this doesn't have anything to do with human beings. And I'm like, do you really think these people are doing science experiments on these animals for no other reason? They're not trying to figure out if I do this to something, how it responds and how it reacts and how that will relate to people. So I know for sure this stuff is socially engineered. It's even in language. You know, when we look at housing projects, what is a project? A project is an experiment that's being done in order to see what the outcome is going to be. So we have a bunch of people who are forced into housing experiments, but nobody is even thinking about the word project as an experiment. They just call it projects because this is where people are living at when they're poor. No, this is an experiment. We place people on top of each other in dilapidated conditions with no finances, with no real education, with no resources, and we're doing this to see how these people are going to respond to this. So there is that dichotomy of people who understand the social engineering, but the hard part is getting the people who don't believe in the social engineering to understand, because they are so detrimental to us, because they begin to develop this mindset that they don't have to help anybody else because your condition is just your fault individually. And I always try to get people to understand that we are not oppressed as individuals. So, yes, an individual can rise up, or as Malcolm would eloquently say, they would be part of token integration. And so they would raise the one person up to make you feel like, you see, you could do this, but you're not doing it because it's just something wrong with you. And so we really got to get people to understand the social engineering aspect of this. And especially when you look at these scientific experiments with these animals, it will show you exactly what they did to us, because they're not experimenting on those animals for no reason at all.
Brother Chance, when we first came here, our ancestors first came here and was forced into chattel bondage, they separated our ancestors through a brutal system of rape and creating offspring with lighter skin color. They didn't have to get more sophisticated because we wasn't allowed to read, to educate ourselves for a period of 250 years almost. Mm-hmm. But after the Civil War and our people fought to free themselves, and we start going into society and making our own way, the advancements of our people were noticed by the system, by white folks. During the late 1800s and early 1900s, you had two men that became icons in our historical journey, W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington. Both of them had different approaches to our people becoming more advanced, put it that way. Being able to help themselves in the society. The talented 10th phrase was associated with W.E.B. Du Bois.
Yes.
Talk about the talented 10th, what it meant, how other people thought about that talented 10th. And I'm talking about Europeans, being that our experience was here basically with Europeans. Talk about how they did they believe in the talented 10th? Talk about that whole situation around that talented 10th, because that kind of opens up this whole discussion.
Definitely. So in 1903, W.E.B. Du Bois published an article titled The Talented 10th. And in it, he described how, and it wasn't just about Africans who were here in America, it's about just races in general. And his philosophy was that with any race, it's going to be about 10% of that race who are going to be, I hate it, Kim, because sometimes people want to feel like it makes it sound like these people are better, because it's not that you're better. Everybody just has different roles. But it's going to be 10% of the people who are a little more genius, who are going to be a little bit more wealthy, who are going to be a little bit more prominent, who are going to be a little bit more educated. You know, it's just going to be some people who are just going to be at what would appear to be a higher level.
Now, naturally gifted, so to speak.
Just naturally gifted, you know, people. Like when you go to school, everybody's not going to be super smart.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a percentage of people who are. But I always want to emphasize that that does not mean the people who aren't, you know, that smart on that kind of level are any less than. Everybody just has different roles.
Mm-hmm.
So what W.E.B. Du Bois believed was that it was that talented 10th's duty that since they were somewhat exceptional, that they were to use their exceptionalism in order to raise up the rest of their people. So it wasn't about him just saying, you know, it's 10% of us that are better than the rest of you guys. No, it was saying, all right, I recognize that some of us have a skill set that's a little bit different. We have a little more prominence. We have a little more power. We have a little more wealth. Well, us, we need to come together to lift up the rest of our people. So that's what the concept of the Talented Tenth was about, identifying who these people were and getting those people to uplift the rest of the race. And this is where we struggle at, and this is why the system of self-hate was created. So now you ask the question, did other people believe in the Talented Tenth? Hell yes. John D. Rockefeller was one of the champions for it. He fully believed in it. And most of the prominent Caucasians believed in it, which is why they created this system of self-hate. This is the whole purpose of this self-hate. If I can indoctrinate every black person with this inferiority complex, with a white superiority complex, if I can indoctrinate all of them with feeling that something about their people is wrong and that they need to assimilate and integrate into white culture, I can keep that Talented Tenth from ever wanting to help the 90% of their people, because they're going to be focused on being a part of us. So now through that system of self-hate, that's what the goal is. A system has to have a goal. And the goal of the system of self-hate is, I got so much going on in my mind right now, is to separate the black Talented Tenth from the rest of their race in order to assure that they won't help the other 90% raise up. That's what this whole system is about. Now, those who are in the 90%, the self-hate that they experience is just a byproduct of what the real goal is. Because if they can continue to keep our wealthiest people, you know, like when they were trying to get Michael Jordan to speak out about something that was going on in North Carolina, and his response was, well, Republicans wear sneakers too. If they can keep our billionaires from wanting to help the other 90%, then, hey, we'll never rise up, because who's going to help us? They're not going to help us. And so that's what the system is about. So W.B. Du Bois coined it. The Caucasians believed in it wholeheartedly, and they believed in it so much that they had to create something in order to counter it, because they know if that Talented Tenth stays connected with the 90%, it's no way to stop us from rising up.
Now, you know what? I want to ask or expand on one more thing, and I'm going to turn the mic over, pass the mic to Brother Richard. You know, if you look at our struggle since we've been here, in the early 1900s, I guess from a period to maybe 1900 to 1925, the Talented Tenth philosophy among blacks seemed to be working. And I think it worked in conjunction with the system that we were under. And when I say that, I'm saying this. We were living in a racist society which marginalized our people and forced our people to live among one another. So when you had black doctors, black lawyers, black professionals, black artisans, they lived among the community. And by and large, or as a byproduct of that, the community started to rise. And you had the black Wall Streets, you had the Rhodes Woods, you had the Wilmington, North Carolinas. You had them all over the country.
All over the country.
Now, if you look at the other side of the coin, you had a white society that was either rich or poor. And most whites were poor and lived in the cities. So, being that they didn't have the job opportunities, they started doing what you see that they point the finger at our people now. They started bootlegging, selling dope, killing one another, Chicago, New York, gangsters, firing guns all in the street, murder capitals of the world. After the market fell in the 30s, and they come up with this new deal and all these WPA to put white folks in a position to develop what is considered now as the middle class. At the times we were talking about, there were no middle class. So we see that the Talented Tenth worked when our people had a mindset to work with one another. I think they ramped up the strategy that you're talking about after or during the time of Roosevelt and moving forward and the development of that white middle class. They ramped up this strategy of self-hate to counter that Talented Tenth. What's your feelings on that?
I wholeheartedly agree, and I spoke all of that's in the book.
Okay.
all of that right there is in the book. because we were forced to live together. We, the talented chess lived with the 90%, and we had Black Wall Streets all over the country. So we got a lot of people talk about Tulsa, Oklahoma, but you named a few others. I mean, there were these thriving towns all over the country. Our towns were better than all the Caucasian towns.
Yes.
And so when we see in Red Summer in 1921, when they began to burn our towns down, you know, so there's a collusion between the government and the poor Caucasians to destroy our towns. But now, see, this is the thing why we got to get on top of our education, which is one of the parts of the system itself hates. People are just finding out about the Black Wall Street, and most people still don't know that, all right, after those towns were burned down, we rebuilt more towns. Because, again, the talented 10th being with the 90%, it's no way to prevent the people from building up, because the talented 10th is going to do everything to help everybody else when they're forced to.
Okay.
So we built those towns back up from the 1920s up into the 1950s until we had integration. And I always let people understand integration had nothing to do with Caucasians' moral epiphany. They didn't just all of a sudden become good people and say, well, I think it's time that we should want to live with them. Integration was all about them being able to infiltrate our communities that we had that were thriving. So we had integration started in 1954, and then in 1956, the Highway Act was passed. So now they're building these new highways, and literally, I mean, this always sounds like a boogeyman ghost story, but it's true. In 1956, when they passed this Highway Act, they literally built highways through every single Black business district. They eminent domained every Black business district all the way up until 1997. They eminent domained the business district in Miami, the last one that they took. They literally eminent domained our business districts, and then they built highways through. It correlates with integration, and then they begin to lure the best of us away. Well, you can come live with us now since we're integrated, or you can come work with us now. And after they destroyed their businesses, so now they gotta choose. Now I gotta relocate my business because they destroyed the Black district. So where am I going to relocate to now? I can't put it anywhere. So now they're luring us to come in certain areas, and that's when they physically separated the talented 10th. From the 90% after integration and this Highway Act. That's when they physically separated us, but then they began to mentally separate us after that.
You know, it's kind of ironic that you mentioned that, because I was listening to a terrestrial radio program on Friday, and it was out of Richmond, Virginia, and the older gentleman was saying that during that period that you're talking about, that they built I-95 straight through a Black commercial district in Richmond. And basically tore it apart. So it's kind of ironic that you said that, because I heard that being stated by an older gentleman 2 days ago.
It's real. In Kinloch, Missouri in 1981, they took the area in Kinloch, Missouri and built the Lambert Airport. The freeways, all the freeways that you see in L.A., they got like 5-7 different freeways. All of those freeways represent a Black business district that's gone.
Brother Richard.
Yes, sir. And Brother, well, you know what? I want to start off with Brother Chance. Can you lay out the, the chapters to your book?
Yeah, so as soon as we start, you want me to just name them? Okay,
just
well, the first thing we're doing is identifying the system. After we go into identifying the system, we deal with the five parts, the five working parts of the system of self-hate: economics, education, entertainment, etiquette, and then news. And then after we go through those, we deal with the psychological buy-in of how they get people to buy into being against their own best self-interest. So with our entertainers, they use brand protection. They tell you you're protecting your brand. With our corporate people, they use professionalism. So professionalism is never going to include anything Black. And then with the everyday person, they use reverse racism. So if we talk about building our own Black town, they convince them a lot of people that doing that is racist, or being black first, or supporting black businesses is racist. So those are the chapters and the different little breakdown.
And the other thing that comes to me, I'd like you to develop in order to set the context of, as I see also the conversation is, and I heard you do it, but the question about system. How do you define a system, and how do you define this system actually doing this? You gave a lot of examples that's in your book about the outcomes that are given, but as it being a system, how did you come to recognize it as a system, and what makes it a system?
Okay, well, a system is a well-organized and purposeful structure with members, entities, factors, and parts that simultaneously influence each other in order to maintain their existence, the existence of the system, in order to maintain the goal of the system. So that's just what a system is, definition-wise, per collegiate Webster's Dictionary. Now, how did I come to see it as a system? I was just looking at it, you know, when I just begin to look at history and seeing things done over and over and over again, seeing things being intentional. So when we start with the economics, that's where we start at. So like I said, we had our own towns. They burned our towns down. They thought that was going to work. So now after they burned the towns down, we rebuilt the towns again. So it's like, damn, well, if we burn their towns down, all they're going to do is rebuild these towns. And as I said, they believe in the Tarleton Tiff theory. So now either we burn these towns down and they continue to build them up and eventually build a military to overtake us, or we find a way to take this Tarleton Tiff apart. So this way we don't have to burn them down, but we can get them out of the neighborhood so they won't build them up. So economically, they destroyed our business districts. They use integration to lure our people, our talented tenants into their neighborhoods. And once they did that, we move into the educational system. So now, after Brown versus Board of Education, which, oh my God, it's just, as Malcolm said, only a fool will send their children to be educated by their enemies. And so with this education system, they wipe out black accomplishments. I mean, it's a travesty that I just found out about Reverend Leon, and I'm from Philly, to find out about Reverend Leon Sullivan just a few years ago and everything that he did. I'm so ashamed, and I'm okay with, you know, being transparent about my, you know, my ignorance. One day, I caught the train to go to Cecil B. Moore Avenue to go down to the UNIA, and it's a couple of years ago. And when I got off the train, because I had never got on the train down there before, I saw this big picture of this black man. And next to the black man was the name Cecil B. Moore. And I had no idea Cecil B. Moore was black, who he was, or what he did. Now, I knew the street my entire life. I'm about 33 years old when this happened. And so I'm trying to figure out, well, how come I never learned this? Why is the Philadelphia school system not teaching these great accomplishments of these men who have streets named after them? So I'm looking at this education system, and the system is being used to do three things. It's used, one, because majority of the teachers are middle-aged white women. So it's used to give the impression that white people hold the keys to all the proper information. So we have people who, if a Dr. Francis Cress Welsing or a Neelie Fuller or Amos Wilson, John Henry Clark, when if we hear any information from them that contradicts what we heard from Caucasians, we'll side with the Caucasians before we side with our own black psychologists, because the education system trained us to do that. It also, when you read the quote that's in the education section, it comes from Carter G. Woodson, when he says that the same educational system that inspires the oppressor by making him believe he created everything worthwhile sparks and crushes the genius of the black child by making him feel his people have never done anything that have amounted to anything, and they will never be on the level of other races. A Negro thus educated is a hopeless liability to his race. So Carter G. Woodson, in his book, The Miseducation of the Negro, lays out how the educational system is used to make us feel inferior. Because now they'll teach us about explorers. First of all, they always phrase things to make it sound better. My daughter almost got in trouble a little bit in school because I don't allow her to call pilgrims, explorers, or anything. She has to call them terrorists because that's what they are. So whenever they talk about it at school, she says, "No, can you please call them terrorists? Because those people are terrorists. They came to a country and killed people. They're terrorists." So they teach these explorers. They'll teach Leopold, but they won't teach that Leopold killed millions and millions of Africans. They'll teach Cecil Rhodes, and even black people want to get a Rhodes scholarship, but they won't teach that he went to South Africa and killed millions and millions of Africans. Now, they'll teach us that Hitler killed Jews, and they want us to hate Hitler, but they won't teach us about any of these other Caucasians who harm black people. So this education system will esteem and venerate the Caucasian all over the world, but they will never teach any of the accomplishments of African people all across the world when we've done everything. I mean, it almost sounds like you just want to be a black supremacist by saying we created everything, but it's just the truth. It's just a factual thing, but they don't teach it. And so the school system does that. Then the third thing the school system does is, in the black neighborhood, is it undereducates us. So the most that we can do is work for them. You know, so when I'm just looking at what it does over and over and over again, because it's one thing if something happens one time, but when something repetitively happens, that's a system. That is something that somebody is intentionally doing. So if something has happened over and over again in different ways, it's like the movie 13th, how he showed us that, you know, there was no prison system prior to the ending of slavery. And once slavery was over, all of a sudden, they built jails, and we dominated the jails immediately. They locked us up for all kinds of different things. And so as I looked at what was happening, the frequency of how it was happening, I was able to see that this is not just happenstance. This is intentional, and this here is a system.
And therefore, you would agree that this system, let me say that I agree with all that you say in the sense of the design and the intentional outcome. So would we be able to say that the system that was constructed earlier, say, than the turn of the 20th century. And I'm looking at, when we look at Philadelphia specifically, say, during the colonial period, say when they had free Africans, which you had to have papers, and then enslaved Africans, and then moving to creating a mechanism to separate the two, say the whole American Colonization Society, which was to send free Africans away, separate them from enslaved Africans. Would that fit into your paradigm of how this is a system and support it?
Yes, definitely, because the system, while the system didn't get fully functional it didn't get perfected until maybe the 50s and the 60s, it definitely worked. When we look at, and I know some people want to debate the Willie Lynch letter. I don't know why we want to debate it, because everything in it, now I can't say for sure a man named Willie Lynch was on the shore saying this, but everything in the letter is true. But when we look at that, there's a system in place to make a slave. You know, there was a difference between a slave master and a slave maker. The slave master just owned enslaved Africans, but the maker was the one, when they would come from Africa, when they would drop them off in the Caribbean, they would spend time there, sometimes a 2-year process of being broken before they're brought here. And so they're mentally conditioned. And after they're mentally conditioned, when they're brought here, they're still conditioned over and over again by selling a son, taking him, not allowing the man to marry his you know, a wife, making him breed, and then taking him somewhere else and creating single motherhood, then stripping those children from that mother, and all of this trauma. People that think that slavery has no effect on us, I think they really don't understand psychology. Now, when the Twin Towers went down, people all over the country, some of the world, did not want to fly because they were traumatized from hearing about what happened. But yet, if you can have PTSD from hearing about somebody you don't know dying in a plane accident, but you want to tell me that for 200 and something years, of people are beat down, they are degraded, they are told they are nothing, they are told they are less than human, they are forced to work from sunup to sundown for nothing, they're fed slops, and they're treated as if they are subhuman, that one day, all of a sudden, they're free, and they're free with no kind of mental, emotional, financial, or spiritual repair. And those same traumatized people have to teach the free generation. You can't tell me that what the mindset of the slaves over 100 years ago is not still a part of us, because they taught us. You know, it's not like some, you know, some people who were never slaves taught the free generation. The free generation were taught their ideas and philosophies from people who were enslaved for over 200 years. So that system that they implanted in the slave was still going on, still being carried on afterwards. So we see a lot of people in the South, you know, they wanted to marry lighter. You know, they didn't want to be as dark, and they were telling the kids, don't be out in the sun. You don't want to get too dark in the summer. And all of that came from the system of slavery. All of that came from the system of slavery. So the self-hate, definitely, the system definitely started then. But they worked it and worked it and worked it once we got to the 50s and 60s, man, when they really implemented it. And it's still tearing us apart to this day.
We're in conversation with Mr. Mitchell Chance, activist and author. This is the fifth book that he's written, and we're discussing it this evening. The topics are centering around his latest book, The Great Hijack, The Stealing of the Black Talented Tenth Through a System of Self-Hate. Let's go to the phones. 267, area code, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yes, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
Brother Timothy. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir.
How's everyone? You got
good.
Great guest like you always do. I'm going to say this, that you mentioned a very important person. You mentioned Malcolm X. And one thing that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us, the first degree of the student enrollment, is who is the original man? The original man is the owner, the maker of the planet, cream of the planet, God of the universe. Right there, in that first degree of the student enrollment, Malcolm X's psychology of white supremacy was totally broken. He was able to merge himself in the blackness of himself. One of the lessons that was given to us was who are the 5%, poor righteous teachers, who are the 10%, the bloodsuckers of the poor, who are the 85%. The 85% were the poison animal eaters, hard to lead in the right direction, easy to lead in the wrong. My thing is that breaking white supremacy is one of the hardest things in America. Everything that's in America, it can easily be swallowed up. But here's the thing. Let's talk about where W.E.B. Du Bois, William Edward Burghardt. And let's talk about his psychology. Let's talk about his mind. Let's talk about how he developed. And I think his idea of a 10% was Paul Robeson, Langston Hughes, readings from Robeson's his struggles. He was black, whether he was in Europe or whether he was in America. When it comes to Du Bois, I'm a Lincoln University graduate. Mr. Samuel, I read some of his transcripts there, which is still there now. And if his idea of the 10% were those men, well, those men were great. But here's where the problem comes in. If you ever read some of Du Bois' works, his early works, he has a book called The Education of the Negro, where he talks about teaching blacks Greek and Latin and European ideology and thought. So I see a mix-up here, but as Du Bois, he calls it himself the double consciousness. He's dealing with the two-ness. His own psychology. You remember, after he graduated from that, at that time, that great Black Fist University, he went to the University of Berlin. The scholarship money ran out. He learned a lot about the psychology of the mind. He came back, became the first PhD from Harvard. But getting back to what I want to say is that even in Du Bois's his understanding and coming to knowledge, look at the title of his books. The soul of black folks, Black Princess, the Black Reconstruction. He developed, and him being an enemy to Garvey was one of his most greatest mistakes. But at that time, if you look at it, there was a man in the midst of them who was the leader at that time. That was Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington said, you can have this education, but you can do nothing without the trade with it. So I look at Du Bois in many ways, because I said, I had to make a case. I want it to be Du Bois, Booker T. Washington, and Marcus Garvey all mixed together. But that's white supremacy in America. Swallow things. I want to know your opinion on that, what you think, and give it back to me.
Is that directed towards me?
Yes. What do you think?
Well, I
want to know, did Du Bois and his ideology mean the 10% in that fashion? Because the 10% at that time, like Langston Hughes, who wouldn't Langston Hughes not be a part of our Black Free thing? Paul Robinson? Look at the people that were amongst the 10%. And in their ideologies of fight for our struggle, they were Black. They were totally Black. Now we got to look with the messenger talking about the 10% part, the bloodsuckers of the poor, who the 85%. So very easily leading the wrong blessings, hard leading the right. And the 5%, the poor righteous teachers, who know who the 85 and the 10% are. So where did Du Bois in his thinking, he's a little messed up. He might have been in track of some things. Tell me what you think. I want to know your position with Du Bois.
My position with Du Bois is I wholeheartedly believe in the talented 10th, but I'm not a fan of anything else that W.E.B. Du Bois believes up until the end of his life. I am a Garveyite.
Right.
And as you said, him being against Garvey, him and the preachers and the whole Garvey Must Go campaign is probably the worst thing ever. I believe the concept of a 10% because that's something that I feel like I can't refute, because I can see that it's a small percentage of us, of every race that, operates at a different level. But as far as him, really wanting us to integrate, wanting us to have just European education, and all of these different things, and not wanting to be self-reliant. When Garvey hit the scene, he wanted us to be self-reliant. Prophet Noble Drew Ali wanted us to be self-reliant, and W.E.B. Du Bois didn't. So outside of the concept of the talented 10th, I am not a fan of Du Bois at all. And his later writings, because he ended up being exiled. He finished his life in Africa. He looked back and regretted some of the things that he did.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a product of the education that he received. And so that's what this system does. It sneaks up on you so subtly that you don't even realize you're working against your own best self interest, because it's packaged so well. It's packaged so well through the education that you just think, oh, yeah, this is good, and you don't even dig that you're going against your own people. That's why this system is so effective.
Brother, that's a book that I have to get off the shelf that I haven't read yet, called The Man in the Hat. Have you read it yet?
No, I have not.
Well, it talks about how Du Bois undermined Garvey in a very shrewd and terrible way. I haven't read it yet.
Yes.
I'm going to go in and out of it. I feel your position. As far as I'm concerned, Marcus Garvey had one of the biggest movies in the 20th century, one of the greatest movies we ever had. I'm with you on that. But in Du Bois development, remember where Du Bois comes from, how he's raised. See, a lot of us, how we raised, the institutions we go to, how we break this white supremacy. Malcolm came across the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And Marcus Garvey had the picture of Jesus Black. So where we're at, who influences us, and how we go, how we get there. That's the thing. How you start off is one thing, but how you end up is another. And you're going to make mistakes throughout the day. But right now, today, there's no reason why Black people should not be Black. Now, that was the 20th century. Right now, today, schools, hospitals, businesses, economics, we should no reason not be on that track today. The internet, look at these Uncle Toms today compared to what the Uncle Toms were back then. I mean, Uncle Tom is Uncle Tom. A traitor is a traitor. We don't want no traitors. Okay. But these Negroes, they should be much better than what they are today, sir. I want to know your opinion there. How do we get out of this with these Negroes?
Tim, I want to thank you for your call. And listen up for the answer.
All right.
Peace.
Peace.
If you want to speak on that, or you want to speak on it a little later on, that'll be good, Brother Chance. We'll take another call. Let's go to go ahead.
We'll take another call.
Go ahead. Okay. Let's go.
We can take another call.
Let's go to 602 area code 602.
Yes, brothers. This is Brother Marcos from Memphis. Good evening.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Good evening to the guests. You know, the brother, right? Well, it's about Garvey. He's right. And some of these Negroes, they make Uncle Tom look bad. Because the original Uncle Tom, he was taking the blows for black people. These here Toms make Uncle Tom look bad. They're more like Sambo or Stephen Fitchett or bootlicking Negroes, you know. But if the brother could speak a little bit on the Jewish involvement in integration, because we know that the Jews played an integral part in integration. It wasn't so much ideology of the WASP. It was these Jews who sided with us, saying, oh, we are liberal friends, our liberal friends.
And Brother Marcus, that was a strategy too now. But go ahead.
Yeah, here you speak about, well, you see, while they were telling us to integrate, they were separating. You see, because they robbed the whites and the black folks. You see, these slick Jews, you see, because while they pushing us, oh, you should integrate, they wasn't integrating with nobody. They were separating and keeping the money for themselves. See, so if the brother could speak a little bit about, you know, the Jewish involvement, you know, as far as integration and black folks, I would hang up and listen. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your contribution.
All right. Well, the first thing, I don't, you know if any of our callers already understand this. When we talk about the so-called Jews, the first thing we have to deal with is they're not Jews. These people are Europeans who read the Word of God and decided that they wanted to take on the and be God's chosen people. And so that through manipulation, they stole Israel and have and have called themselves Jews. Even within in the Bible, God already saw this. When you read Revelations 3:9 and Revelations 4:9, it says that those who claim to be Jews, they are not Jews. They are the synagogue of Satan, straight from the Word. So those folks that were here, and even the proper terminology of them are Ashkenazi Jews, and it's crazy that the word Nazi is in there. So they are Europeans who stole Africa. Now, I deal with this in the book also. Prior to 1950, there's no such thing as the Middle East. That word, that terminology does not exist. That terminology comes up there in 1950 when they began to go over there and divide stuff up. Prior to that, all of that was considered Northeast Africa. That's what it was. So when everybody that's from that area originally are black, dark-skinned people. So these, and it's still black Jews that are in Israel to this day that have never left. But they will never know it because they're trying to perpetrate a fraud. So now as he's talking about them telling us to integrate and them not integrating because they don't believe in integration at all. They have one of our books, which is called the Talmud. And this is how a true Jew is supposed to deal with each other and deal with outside nations. The reason why they are thriving at such a high rate because they're following these principles that God laid out. These Jews, and if they tell them, you don't take your fellow Jew to no court, you don't depend on nobody else for your education, you don't depend on them for any kind of a government, a system. And if you talk to a Jew, they'll tell you a true Jew is not going to be on nobody's welfare because they come together and put their money together to help each other because this is what they are taught as what they're as really. It sounds so crazy, but, you know, really as what the black people are supposed to be doing, but they have stolen our identity. So they knew if they get us to do the opposite of what they knew we were supposed to do, that they can benefit off of it. So you go ahead and integrate, and we'll buy some buildings up. Here in Philly, our mega church, our Enon Tabernacle Baptist Church, right?
over 13,000 members. Pastor Waller, a friend of mine. So I was talking to him one day, and he was talking about this big shopping mall. These Jews opened up this big shopping mall, and they asked him to come cut the ribbon. So he's like, I'm trying to figure out, what does this have to do with me? Why do they want me to cut the ribbon? So he asked them. These are Jews that's from New York. And they told him, well, we know you have that church with all of those members over here, and we know they're going to be coming over here and patronizing us, so we just thought it fitting that you would be a part of this. So they will come from other places to benefit off of us, but they're not going to let nobody else benefit off of them.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute, Brother Chance. Now, I guess you're talking about, for folks that are not from Philadelphia, from my Philadelphia listening audience, I guess you're talking about that Sheltenham Mall. Well, Cedarbrook, Cedarbrook, which is across from him. Now, I don't think that the Enon Baptist Church has any businesses in that Cedarbrook Mall.
No, they don't. No.
But they have him come over there to ask him to symbolically cut the ribbon.
Because he knew that his 13,000 members were going to be coming over there to spend money.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah. This is crazy, isn't it? This stuff, it almost seems unreal, but it's real. So, yeah, they'll tell us to integrate because at that time they understood when you integrate, you lose power of your community. And if you lose power of your community, I can then come in and assume the power that you should have had. And that's what they do to us. But they will never let you know, you can't even move into a Jewish neighborhood if you try. The homeowners association is not going to let you move in. Ain't no integration. In some of the areas, the Jewish areas, quote-unquote Jewish areas in Bala Cynwyd, some of the streets, it sounds like if you don't live on the street, you can't even drive through. Right off Writers Ferry Road, you cannot even drive through the streets if you don't live there.
Where's the top of the hour, Rich?
Let's another question that your position kind of raised. In relationship
well,
to book,
Richard, do me a favor.
How is the,
Richard,
what you say, the
can you hear me?
That word right. Melillians
Richard.
Are identifying with the context of what you lay out in your books as far as in your talks and in your just people coming through to purchase your book.
Well, I actually didn't deal with anything related to melanin in the book at all.
Not melanin, millennials.
No, you said millennials.
I guess the younger portion.
Yeah, millennials.
Oh, millennials.
Millennials.
Anything specific to that? I don't think I had anything specific just to the millennials. What's the exact question?
But what I'm asking is how are they receiving your book?
Oh, how are they receiving the book? Oh, they're loving it. They're loving it. They are loving it. They're eating it up. And my videos got millions and millions of views, man. The millennials are taking to it. And definitely because right now, with all the information that's being spread throughout the internet, they're able to see things. And the millennial generation has already been kind of bucking the system. So when I dealt with the system of Saul Kate, when I dealt with the etiquette, you know, they get us to hate ourselves through etiquette. So we'll move away from our culture, our own posture, because they'll demonize us. So, you know, if we talk with our hands, they'll call us disrespectful and rude, but they'll never say anything about Italians talking with their hands. See, some people are just, I'm talking with my hands right now, and nobody can even see me. But if they can demonize your etiquette and make you feel like the way you walk, the way you talk, the way you dress, it's unprofessional, it's uncivilized, it's inappropriate. And the millennials were already trying to fuck the system. So when I start breaking that thing down, they're like, oh, my God. Now I see why they're trying to make us conform, and we don't want to conform. You know, so the millennials and even those that are under the millennials, because in January I did a panel discussion on this, and then I did about an hour-long lecture on it. And there was some young kids in there. One young guy was like 17, and he wrote on his Facebook page, you know, my mom dragged me out to this event, and I was upset, but it had to be the most amazing thing I ever witnessed. And that just blew my mind for somebody that young. to say this was just the most amazing thing. Like, I would come out listening to somebody talk. And the way I, you know, everything was broken down, the young guy was like, wow. So the millennials and what comes after the millennials? Generation X?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Generation X. Man, everybody's receiving it. Because I took it in the school, to elementary school, middle school, and everything, yeah.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. You can get on board by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Join the conversation with activist and author, Brother Mitchell Chance. The book, The Hijack, The Great Hijack, The Stealing of the Black Talented 10th Through a System of Self-Hate. We'll be right back. Get involved with the conversation.
Are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? You realize that nobody's going to save black people but us. If you understand that no existing political party prioritizes the best interests of African Americans as a collective, if you believe that leadership is as leadership does, and this means that the best leaders for the black collective must come from the ranks of those who place and hold the best interests of black people foremost and uttermost, if you understand that black people must develop the mindset and the will to finance their own racial uplift organizational efforts, then get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. That's www.iamoneofthemillion.com.
The controlled press, the white press, inflames the white public against Negroes. The police are able to use it to paint the Negro community as a criminal element. The police are able to use the press to make the white public think that 90% or 99% of the Negroes in the Negro community are criminals. And once the white public is convinced that most of the Negro community is a criminal element, then this automatically paves the way for the police to move into the Negro community, exercising Gestapo tactics, stopping any black man who is in the, on the sidewalk, whether he is guilty or whether he is innocent, whether he is well-dressed or whether he is poorly dressed, whether he is educated or whether he is dumb,
whether he's a Christian or whether he's a Muslim, as long as he is black and a member of the Negro community, the white public thinks that the white policeman is justified in going in there and trampling on that man's civil rights and on that man's human rights. Once the police have convinced the white public that the so-called Negro community is a criminal element, they can go in and question, brutalize, murder unarmed, innocent Negroes, and the white public is gullible enough to back them up. This makes the Negro community a police state. This makes the Negro neighborhood a police state. It's the most heavily patrolled. It has more police in it than any other neighborhood, yet it has more crime in it than any other neighborhood. How can you have more cops and more crime? Why? It shows you that the cops must be in cahoots with the criminals.
The police the same way. They put their club upside your head and then turn around and accuse you of attacking them. Every case of police brutality against a Negro follows the same pattern. They attack you, bust you all upside your mouth, and then take you to court and charge you with assault. What kind of democracy is that? What kind of freedom is that? What kind of social or political system is it when a black man has no voice in court, has nothing on his side other than what the white man chooses to give him? My brothers and sisters, we have to put a stop to this. And it will never be stopped until we stop it ourselves. They attack the victim. And then the criminal who attacked the victim accuses the victim of attacking him. This is American justice. This is American democracy. And those of you who are familiar with it know that in America, democracy is hypocrisy. Now, if I'm wrong, put me in jail. But if you can't prove that a democracy is not hypocrisy, then don't put your hands on me.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. Tonight, we're in conversation with our special guest, activist, author, Mr. Mitchell Chance. The book, The Great Hijack, The Stealing of the Black Talented Tenth Through a System of Self-Hate. We'll go right back to our guest, Brother Chance. You know, before I continue the conversation and go to some of our calls that are waiting, I want to play a clip. You still there, Brother Chance?
Yeah, I'm there. And it's great that you just played that Malcolm clip. I used that, a quote from that, in one of the chapters.
Okay. All right. Before we go back to the conversation and to the phones, I want to play a clip. We played it before on this program, but I think it's very appropriate now, being the subject matter that we're talking about. I'm going to play a voice clip, and it came from one of the State of Black America conferences that used to be held by Tavis Smiley. And the two individuals that you hear, they go, I don't have to introduce them. Everybody can recognize them by their voice. But listen to the mindset, because you stated something a little while ago in your conversation, Mr. Chance, about it's so subtle that a lot of our people don't even realize that they're doing these things or even developing this mindset. Mm-hmm. I kind of got that right. I'm paraphrasing what you said.
No, that's it.
But listen to the conversation. What is stated by both men, and see if we can recognize exactly what you're talking about, and especially in the statements made by one of the brothers. I want to play this clip.
We're winning. We came here 30 years ago for the March on Washington. From Texas across to Florida up to Virginia, we couldn't use a single public toilet. We could not use a single hotel. We couldn't drink water from a single fountain. We did not have the right to vote. We didn't have a congressional black caucus. We didn't have 400 black mayors. We did not have the capacity to even think about foreign affairs, dealing in private survival. But just like when David knocked down Goliath, he couldn't go and party because Goliath wasn't no eunuch, he had some babies. And you knock down Jim Crow and you got Jim Crow Esquire. The giants keep coming. And so do not end up in a way you say, well, what can we do? Well, we, in fact, the laws that trapped South Africa of apartheid in 1948 came from here, from the 1896 laws. What Mandela's trying to do now is what we achieved in 1965. The fact is, we are winning and our struggling has not been in vain, but there are some different options. For example, when Dr. King would make the case that we just end racism by law and get inside the plant gate with an education, we can grow. That was a period of economic growth. Now we get inside the plant and the plant is closed. There's a very different context in which we operate. Zero economic growth among the industrial nations of the world is a factor in this. The economic downturn cannot be ignored. Lastly, what we beat legislation with Jim Crow, but now Jim Crow Esquire regulation. The giants keep coming. And I would say lastly, Aristide is on his way back to Haiti because of us. Mandela got out of jail because of us. We're going to bring that matter to a resolution in Nigeria because of us. And now there will be an urban policy because we will not back down. So in the face of all of these challenges, do not assume that our struggles have been in vain and not productive.
I'll take some brief comments from Minister Farrakhan and Representative Waters and then go to your questions.
The scripture teaches, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. And it is ignorance that is the worst enemy of the rise of our people to fulfill our destiny. That ignorance is fed on by corrupt leadership. Now, the scripture again says, woe to the shepherds who feed themselves and not the flock. Should not the shepherds feed the flock? Most of our leaders are handpicked by the very enemy that we're trying to get free from. It's all right for us to say we have a voting rights bill and a public accommodations bill, and all of us, including myself, have benefited from those bills. But to get a public accommodations bill and a voting rights bill and then close black hotels because we sleep in white ones, or close black establishments so that we can spend our money with our oppressor, is not winning. Reverend Jackson, I submit, wait. On one hand, we are winning because every one of these brilliant congresspersons, they represent us. They are brilliant men and women. These are brilliant people in front of us. But what good does it do to have a brilliant head not connected to a black body? I submit. I submit that until and unless we as a mass connect with the Congressional Black Caucus, and our black leaders connect to the black masses, and don't take your eye off the prize, because now you can sit in boardrooms and be media folk now, because little black people marched in the streets and suffered and went to jail to make openings for those of us who sit in leadership. Now we've got to unite at the top
and develop strategies to free our people. Otherwise, we will be saying we're winning, but the masses keep losing. So if the masses keep losing, then we can't be winning unless our agenda is personal. We're looking for self-aggrandizing. But if we're looking for the liberation, if we want the liberation of our people, then ain't none of us winning until all of us become winners.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. I think that clip kind of plays into what you were talking about earlier, Brother Chance, dealing with the hijacking of the Black Talented 10th through the system of self-hate. One politician, half a politician, half minister, looks at the fact that being able to go to the toilet, being able to cast a vote like white people, being able to sit in accommodations, considers that winning. But looking at our people having to struggle all these years to be equal with white folks is not winning. It's not winning. In fact, that whole strategy is backwards as far as I'm concerned. But go ahead and make a couple of comments on what you heard, and I'm going to go to the phones.
Well, I am a Farrakhan fan. I love his teaching. Reverend Albert Tweed, he said, when you want integration, when you project equality, I forget exactly.
No problem. It'll come to you. I can go to the phones while you're thinking about it.
It was so powerful. But in a portion of it, he says, you know, when you want integration, you project your inferiority. And so when we listen to, I guess that was Jesse Jackson or anybody who, even Martin Luther King, whom I love, but some of his thoughts were off. The desire to integrate came from the subtle teachings that white was right and being around white is right. I always talk about the make it out of the hood syndrome. You know, we don't feel like we have made it until we no longer live in black neighborhoods. We live in white neighborhoods. I was at an event one night where it was a rapper, guy from the hood, and it was disturbing because he had a whole song about making it out of the hood, and which is cool. I understand you might want to make it out of a bad place. But he literally said this in his verse. I can't wait until we made it to live in the places where all of our neighbors are racist. What? How do you desire to live with racists? And so that's why the system is so subtle that I can't say that the guy that said that in his rap was bad or he was intentionally trying to do something. I don't think that, you know, Jesse is bad and intentionally trying to do anything harmful. And I definitely didn't think Dr. Martin Luther King was bad or intentionally trying to do something. But subtly, they hated themselves and they didn't see themselves as equal to Caucasians, which is why they wanted to integrate. Because as Malcolm eloquently said, equality is not being able to sit in the front or the back of somebody else's bus. Equality is owning your own bus. So if we really want to be equal, then we need equal segregated towns. We need equal hospitals. We need equal institutions. We need equal colleges. We need equal plumbers. We need equal politicians. We need equal everything. But if you don't have everything that somebody else has and you just want to be a part of them, I said in one of my videos last year, just as an addendum to what Malcolm said, because people get so caught up in this voting, you know, the right to vote in the white man's system is not equality. Having your own system, that's equality. Having your own president, that's equality. And that's what the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey created when he created the UNIA, because that was more than a organization. He created a nation, which is why he developed a red, black, and green flag, because in order to be a nation, you have to have a flag. So he created an actual nation within this nation in which he was the president. That's equality. It's not equality to be integrated. It's not equality to have the right to drink from a fountain, same fountain as a Caucasian. That mindset just shows how subtly even good black people who are not malicious and who are not from their hearts sellout can still have sellout actions that they don't even know because of what they were trained to believe.
Wow. Let's go to 478 area code, 478. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Kia. I'm calling from Macon. How is everyone?
How are you, Kia?
How you doing?
How you doing now?
I'm fine. Thank you so much for taking my call. This is a great conversation, as always. I have, I guess, two quick questions. First question, where can you get the book besides Amazon? Because I don't know. And two, and you may have touched on this earlier because I kind of jumped in a little late. Excuse me. What inspired you to write this book? Because I think it's a great idea.
Okay. Well, to purchase the book, you can go to M Chance Speaks. My name is Mitchell Chance, so mchancespeaks.com. You definitely don't get it from Amazon because Amazon takes about 80% of my money if you buy it straight from them. But if you get it from me, I can make the total profit. So mchancespeaks.com. And yeah, I did kind of go through that. Guys, would it be okay for me to touch on that a little bit more?
Certainly. Go ahead.
No, I can listen. If I can go back and listen, I don't want to waste the time. I just wanted to. It's no big deal. Oh, and then I also wanted to say I totally agree, especially when you talked about the neighborhood. I'm trying to buy a house around here, and I have a realtor, and she showed me homes in the neighborhood that I live in now, which is not, I didn't know because I've lived here less than a year. It's like, I guess, the most expensive zip code, seems like, in this area, and a lot of non-melanated people live in this area. And so I just emailed her. I was like, where do the black people live? Because she keeps... And to her credit, she did, because I just emailed her while I was listening to the show, and she did email me back and told me where they were. So hopefully she'll get the hint, like, I want to look at some homes with black.
That's amazing. I appreciate that.
So thank you so much.
And sister, whatever you missed of the program, you'll be able, I'll have this up in podcast. I guess about a little while after the program is over, you'll be able to go to timeforawakening.com and hear the program in its entirety.
That's fine. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your call. Let's keep it moving. Let's go to 215. 215, area code, 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot, how you doing?
Hey, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Hey, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir. How you feeling?
I'm doing fine. Hey, Brother Chance, it's an honor to talk to you, my dear brother.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Likewise.
You know, Brother Chance, thank you, sir. I was listening to what you said earlier about three things I want to touch on real quick. You mentioned earlier about how some of these so-called Jews, those that call themselves Jews, these garden variety Europeans, and how they have discriminated against our people, because Brother Marcus, you know, first brought up when he had called. And, you know, you made me think, Brother Chance, right here in Philadelphia, it was a man, it was a Jewish fellow named William Levitt. I don't know if you're familiar with him, William Levitt. And he created the town right outside of Philadelphia called Levittown. And when Levittown was created back in the late 40s or early 50s, this so-called Jew, he made it clear in his guidelines how he put it up when he created this so-called suburb outside of Philadelphia, he made it clear no Negroes are allowed to live in Levittown because it was named after him. So he just proves, Brother Chance, what you said is true. They have, a lot of them have been nothing but enemies of our people. They have been worse, to me, in my view, they have been worse against our people than any other whiteies and stuff. I'm talking whether it be Irish, Poles, Polish, Italians, Irish, whatever. They all them are bad, don't get me wrong, but they have been the worst because they've perceived themselves as friends. They've posed, like Malcolm mm-hmm. says, friends, when they've been pretty much an open enemy. And like you say, they'll talk all that integration stuff and everything. They tell us, you know, to integrate and all that stuff. Why they becoming the kings of the financial world, the entertainment world, the media capital, everything. They getting rich and rich while people being poor, but yet they telling us that they friends of ours. So your point... Mm-hmm. It was definitely well taken on that. And my second thing I want to comment, I'm going to make these, and then I get off and let you comment, Brother Chance. I look back, I'm 55 years old now, and I look back when I was growing up, and like you said, how the white media, how they can have you hating yourselves and loving your enemy and hating people that look like you or person of color. Like when I was growing up now in North Philadelphia, and I used to watch, as a young child growing up down in North Philadelphia, I used to watch, the Cowboys, the Indians, the Long Range, all these, westerns and everything like that. And I would jump up there and I would say, get them savages when the cavalry would be killing the Indians and stuff, when Tarzan would be fighting to get the brothers with the snow spears and bones in their nose. I said, kill them black savages. And I didn't realize at that time, Brother Chance, I was really speaking against my own people, against my own self, because this is how the white media is so powerful. They had me hating the Indians, had me hating the brothers and that Tarzan was killing and stuff like that. I'm seeing this white man and this white woman flying through the jungle, having control of the animals, treating the black people in Africa like savages, and I'm sitting there cheering for these white folks and stuff, man. So you're right, that media is a powerful thing, man. The way it just has you just perplexed and have you hating yourself and hating people that look like you. And my third thing, Brother Chance, and I'll get off and stuff, is the inventions and stuff. Like you said, how black people, and it's not no thing about saying black supremacy. This is actual reality. Like you said, black folks, anything meaningful in this world, black folks created it. Right here in Philadelphia, it's a brother that has a radio show called Radio Courtroom. He sent me out a thing years ago called We Did It, They Hit It. And black folks have created just about everything meaningful in this world, things like that we take for granted every day, like the iron, the vacuum cleaner. All these things were created by black people. But you would never know that, though. You know what I mean? You would never know that because the average black person, even the average Caucasian ignorant, they don't know these kind of things, you know? So you're right, Brother Chen. We have created everything meaningful that run this world was created by a black man and in some cases a black woman. But we get no credit for it. That's all I want to comment, Brother Chance. And thank you for your time, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard. I'll hang up and listen to the rest of the show.
Thank you for your call, sir.
You're welcome.
You know, Elliot and Brother Chance, can I, before you go to another caller, can I just raise another question that comes to my mind as we take on to, so you've defined that this is a system that creates this separation from leadership and maybe it's class or the talented 10th. And so my question comes on one side is, does that system affect all of us, whether we're a part of consciously a part or given the identifier as a part of the talented 10th or not? And from as you were developing your book, what solutions you see that we can have in place and need to pump up or need put in place to deal with this specific system?
Okay. So, all right, the first part, does the system infect all of us? Yes, it infects 100% of us, but you can never confuse what a system does with what the goal is. So the system makes all black, the system is put out there to make all black people want to disassociate from their blackness, want to get away from black people, want to move away from black neighborhoods and black communities. But the fact of the matter is, the only people who are going to be able to successfully detach themselves from being black, the only ones who are going to be able to be accepted into these Caucasian circles and positions is going to be our talented 10th. So we have a crazy dichotomy of people in the hood who want to get out of the hood, but can't, and are mad at the people who left the hood. So even though they desire to leave the hood themselves, they mad at the talented 10th for leaving. The talented 10th feels superior to those who weren't able to leave, and that's the goal. That's the goal, to cause that disruption in our unity so we can continually have issues with one another. And it works from every part of the system, even at a young age. Now, let's deal with the go to education. Literally here in Philadelphia, I don't know if any of you noticed or not, but in the preschools, only in the city, in the black neighborhoods, in order to get funding for a preschool, one of the stipulations is you cannot teach the youth how to read. Now, this sounds like slavery all over again. This is 100% real. In order to get your grants to run your preschools, you cannot teach these children how to read. Meanwhile, Catholic schools, parochial schools, or county schools, they can teach their children how to read. Well, so it puts us at a disadvantage from the rip.
Well, wait a minute. Go back. Expound on that, Mr. Chance. You can't teach them how to read, but you're in preschool.
Yeah, in the preschools in the inner city in Philadelphia, One of my second mothers, she ran a preschool. She was breaking it all down to me because I was in there one day, and they were taking all the letters down off of the wall. I said, why are y'all taking all the letters down? She said, we're getting ready to have an inspection. I said, well, what does that mean? She said, oh, well, we can't teach these kids how to read. So when we get an inspection, we got to remove everything that has letters or we won't get no funding.
Wow.
This is real.
And that, which goes to your other point about the government involvement in this whole, exactly. that this system is governmentally driven by laws, exactly. procedures, and policies.
Working hand in hand. Okay.
Yes. So now this is how it affects everybody, just from on a young educational level. So again, the talented test is always going to be a little bit more brilliant. But what do we see happen to brilliant children in these schools? They get bullied, they get teased. So we get a subpar curriculum, and then we get standardized tests, a standard test that does not have what we learned on it. And so now every year these kids are told over and over, well, 90% of you, 80% of you didn't even pass the standard test. So we have a friction between the young talented test and the young 90% because the 90% are upset at the 10% of smart kids and teasing them and beating them up and bullying them. So they don't even want to associate with black people no more. So as they rise up, go to better high schools, and then they go to private white institutions and get a bunch of white friends, and then they want to, and then they work for a white corporation and live in a white neighborhood, and now that talented test, it brewed from preschool. So it affected everybody, but the purpose was to get that young talented test member to have an issue with everybody else that looked like him so he can assimilate into white culture and not help his people. So it makes all of us feel like there's something wrong with our blackness and want to get away from our blackness or want to get away from our communities. But the only people who are going to be able to successfully do it is the talented chess. And everybody else is just going to be stuck wanting to leave the hood but not being able to do it or wanting to do it through basketball, football, or music nowadays. So it affects everybody, but the purpose is to snatch the talented chess away.
And what systems do you see that counters that we are operating, but we need to, bolster or develop more?
Well, it's different things. Well, I don't see anything right now, and I can't say there isn't, but I haven't saw anything that's really countering this the way it should, because we have to have a self-reliant nation-building type of mindset. So to attack the education side of the system of self-hate, we have to have our own schools, 100% independent schools, not a charter school that's still controlled by Caucasians. We have to have our own independent schools where we control everything about it. It's not connected to any Caucasian anywhere, and we control our curriculum. We control our standardized tests, and we control everything that has anything to do with it. So when we go from education to entertainment, we have to begin to tell our own stories. We have allowed, and the brother talked about the Jews taking over the media and the entertainment and all of that. We've allowed other people to come in and dictate what our entertainment is like. So now we have Jews that are in control of our music, and our music shifted from the 90s of a black empowerment type of rap and music, where Queen Latifah saying, who you calling the bitch? To Little Kim saying, I'm the queen bitch. And Trina saying, I'm the baddest bitch, and it begins to shift the culture. So when we are dealing with trying to break, and it's a whole lot for me to just go into right now. So also, after every chapter of the book is solutions. So okay. I flush the issues out, but at the end of every chapter is solutions. So this book is not just a book where you're just reading to hear about all of the problems. No, it's solutions after each chapter. So for the economics, for the education, for the entertainment, for the etiquette, and for the news, there are solutions for each and every one of those things that's within inside the book.
Let's go to, you all right, Richard?
Yes.
Okay, let's go to 646. That's 646. That's Soha. I mean, not Soha, Harlem.
Yeah, my good brothers. Hey, listen. The greatest gift the white man never gave to himself was the creation of the Negro peen. you know, the Negro PM will protect his interests 10 times more than he will ever protect our interests. And he has no problems in doing it. Because he do what he do. Because he's looking to do what? Make sure that he has the spot at the table to get the crumbs. Not the bone, but the crumbs. And they give him the crumbs. And he enjoys the crumbs. They have no plan, no idea, no solution, no nothing to move us forward as the people that is life-giving. If you want to be honest about it and be truthful, out of all of the organizations that we've had in the last 100 years, could we honestly say that there's an organization that the government doesn't control, the government doesn't dictate, and the government in some type of way facilitate what they can do and what they can't do? There's not an organization in the United States.
Even Black Lives Matter.
It's not one. It's beyond. See, Black Lives Matter is not an organization. It's an agenda.
It's an agenda.
You know what I mean? No. Their agenda is to promote homosexuality, twisted freakiness, and decadency on the level with women at the front of it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I mean, let's just be honest about it. You know, we have no army. We have nothing in place that could keep the white man from doing whatever he chooses to do to us when he decides to do it. Jesse Jackson is no leader. If we're going to be honest about it and we're going to be truthful, Farrakhan's no real leader. None of these cats can really stop the white man from doing whatever he pleases to do to us at any given time. None of them have an army. None of them have anything in place that could stop the white man. So because he can't outright slaughter us, what does he do? He creates individuals so that they could be the buffer between the slaughter and keeping us in line. It's like every time you see a Negro on television pontificating for black folks, what is the crux behind it all? The Democratic Party. They can never do anything or lead us anywhere without the Democratic Party. Then you have these Negroes talking about banking black. Now, let me say something to you, and I want you all to listen to me, and listen to me clearly. Putting your money in the bank don't mean a damn thing. If you really want to do something in regards to that black bank, it's to have ownership of their stocks so that you then have a say-so when they have these board meetings and other things going on, that you can lead it in a direction to make sure that the white daddy can't stop them from giving loans out to our people. I don't care how much money you Negroes put in the black bank. Remember this. The white man probably owns the bank because he's probably all in the board of directors and he's probably the facilitator who gave him the money. Now, we just got to be honest about it. But nobody wants to say that. Nobody wants to address that type of issue. So they give you this smoke screen. And Negroes go along with this smoke screen because they don't understand or they don't know better or they don't want to know better or they don't want to confront white people. What could you do if you're going to confront white people? They can't do nothing but two things to you. They can't do nothing but kill you or in jail you. And we got brothers in our prisons right now who have been there for 40 and 50 years and who will never bend. That's manhood. That's real manhood. Would never bend. And we ain't never suffered like them brothers. You know what I'm saying? That's what we got to be sincere and honest about when we talk about what's going on in our community and who's really our friend and who's a foe. The white man that created Jesse Jackson, Farrakhan, Ben Chavis, Al Sharpton, all of these so-called leaders have
well,
been
I can promise you
created.
This. I can promise you this. The white man ain't create me.
I know he hasn't. Because the bottom line is you don't care. You have nothing really to lose by being outspoken because you're not getting the riches from the crazy flock that follow you. You know what I mean? There's a juiciness in it. There's a fury. There's a utopia to listen or be able to stand in front of a group of people and have a group of people believe in the nonsense that you're talking, not really willing to die for you, but to say that they're willing to die for you, and then you in the situation where you're able to spit, you understand what I'm saying, the lyrics and sound good and put fear and then get money in your pocket. You know what I mean?
Jay, let me say this because we got 15 minutes left. Let me say this, right. That, you know, you hear Brother Chance speaking on this issue, the title of the book, The Great Hijack, The Stealing of the Black Town, the 10th Through a System of Self-Hate. You know, this program showcases a lot of our people nationwide and sometimes worldwide that's doing things to change our dynamic. I'm of full faith that this is going to happen. The revolution is going to happen. The revolution, sometimes black people get a little shaky in their boots when you talk about it. But that's talking about a total change. A total change is going to happen. History have a strange way of repeating itself. Rome didn't fall, if I'm not mistaken, from outside forces. It fell internally. You can see that the same thing is happening with this country now. It's the bricks is falling apart. The men who did the founding fathers or the children of these founding fathers can see that the house of cards is falling and they're doing everything to hold it together. Some of the world systems, some of their brethren in Europe, that UA that was so strong for years, starting to fall apart. European brothers backing out, United States, Great Britain. See, they don't want to see this happening. They don't want to see this happening because that means the fall of this country that a lot of people put stock in, including black folks. So when we see these things happening, it's incumbent upon us to rapidly move toward a change of mindset that'll help our people survive this foolishness. We can't get caught up in thinking that, oh, woe is me, we going down with the ship. No. When this ship is going down, I want the life raft so we can move towards dry land. Us rallying around one another, rallying around positive things is the life raft. I don't plan to go down with this ship. I don't plan to see my children go down with this ship because I know that it's going to go down.
But Elliot, let me say this, and I'll get off. I agree with you 100%. And the men that's going to lead us to our liberation and freedom is the people, like you say, that come on the air, like the Brother Chance, the Brother Larry that you had on the week before last, and some of the others. It's not going to be the so-called black leadership
that
we have today.
You'll certainly. I fully agree with that.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Brother Chance is going to be the type of individual that's going to move us forward.
I appreciate
We've been in the last, and I'll leave on this, in the last 50 years under the auspice of the Kings, the Jacksons, the Farrakhans, and the rest. And in all truthfulness, they haven't led us nowhere. And we have to accept it, and now we have to move forward with Brother Chance and some of the others that are doing critical thinking and critical analysis and writing and doing all of the necessary things that will help liberate us as a people and who aren't afraid. You know why? Because they really have nothing to lose. And they understand that if they do get anything of monetary value, it could be taken away from them immediately. Hold up, brothers, and have a beautiful day. And Brother Chance, I will be buying your books this evening.
Thank you. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you for your call.
MChanceSpeaks.com.
If I, Go ahead, Richard. I'm gonna echo, you know, what's being said, because I just want to add my perspective in the question that I raised to you, Brother Chance, of the what are we doing to counter? And I think in the area, and one of the guests we had, you had Elliot, really codified it for me. But what I see is that we're in the age of knowledge production as it relates to Black people. As it relates to African. I mean, we're creating a whole, I mean, even what you're presenting about the understanding the talented tenth is another canon, a body of work, and that knowledge production that people will be able to learn from,
mm-hmm.
and be able to, as Brother Jay say, make the analysis of what kind of moves we're making. And the beauty about knowledge production is that it's invisible, but it provides a perspective. A perspective that's anti that we should be utilizing European values and what they believe is the thing we should do. So when the next organizations and the next leaderships come in these organizations based off of this knowledge production, this way of looking at the system that we're engaged in, and therefore the system that we want to create, is only because of people like you and others who are doing that. And I think that that's what we're doing to counter it. And we can't think lightly of it. And as you say, Elliot, the point of the vehicle that Time for Awakening provides is a way to be able to project that knowledge production, yeah. so others can be able to say, as I hear, and I will too, I'm going to give Brother Chance book. Because I identify with that knowledge.
Let's grab.
That's true.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Bill Chan.
No. I was just saying that. I like what you were saying. That's all.
Okay, we got about 10 more minutes left. We got time for maybe one more. Let's go to 773 area code.
Got me, brother.
Yes, sir.
Oh, thanks for taking this call, brother. You're having a great show as usual. Man, I done heard so much while I've been holding. I'm like a blind dog in a meat house. Brother Chance, with all due respect, I haven't saw or read nowhere where a Black town they burned and terrorized came back up to the grandeur and resources that was wiped away in a flash. Like, for instance, it's been reported that Black Wall Street had over 600 Black businesses. That is mind-blowing. It's unbelievable. A town with 600 Black businesses back in that time. So if that was sometime that came back to that grandeur, I'd like you to share it with us sometime. But in the interest of time, capitalism and communism, that was a major battle in the past between capitalism and real true communism. The capitalists won that war, and here we are today. Capitalism is a dog-eat-dog system with some racism and white supremacists sprinkled through it for the sick Caucasian psychopath sheep who they may think that they are part of this system. Now, Brother Chance, I see us being exterminated. Brother Chance, I do not see us stopping that extermination. Brother Chance, I advocate to our people, if they are able to get out of here, to get some young child, grandchildren out of here, if they are able to do that, they should think seriously about doing that. Now, wherever I call, I always hear brothers talking about fighting back and this and that. That is fine. Billy Bob down south thought he was ready for a war. I got a nephew, he got a 38 and 8 box of shells. He thinks he's ready for a war. He's never been in the military. We are not ready for no war. And if whoever out there, if you're ready to fight this great white father, what about Shanique down the street with 4 children? Ain't got nothing but a butter knife. You gonna protect her? You gonna protect them Black people in hospitals, nursing home, a senior citizen building? You gonna protect all them people? And where is your supply line? You always talk about some gun. It's war about more than a gun.
Well, brother, I'm going to have to stop you, because the system
The system has gotten to you so much that you look at your people as inferior. You don't see your people as capable of doing what's necessary to win. And I can't even continue to listen to that, because that's erroneous. When we look at this country, it's not as powerful as you're making it out to be. We have, first of all, a military that's at an all-time low, a military that's under 2 million people, and it's over 50 million black people in this country. And out of that under 2 million in the military, it's hundreds of thousands of them that are black people. So the military, the white military, is probably under a million people, and we're talking about 50-plus million black people. So to think that we're incapable of doing that, I would say that's erroneous, to have that thought that we can't do that. Now, I'm not saying today just pick up whatever guns that you have and go to war. That's not even something that I teach. But I believe if we build it, because the same way they create guns, why can't we manufacture guns? If they making tanks, why we can't manufacture tanks? If they got missiles,
brother, May I respond quickly? We ain't got no military. Them Negroes in the military work for white supremacy. And if they anywhere near home when this stuff jump off, they going to go home just like some police did down in New Orleans, and just like they going to do anywhere. We're not ready to wage no war on nobody. And we need to stop telling our people that foolishness, because millions of them are going to be slaughtered by the most powerful government that ever walked this planet.
Brother X, let me ask you something.
We've been on this call for 2 hours. Who ever talked about waging a war?
That's what they're going to do, brother.
That wasn't a conversation at all tonight.
I ain't saying what you talked about it. I'm letting people know this is what's coming down the pipe, and that we are not prepared for no war against the most powerful government in the world.
But
we're not prepared for it.
I have to say, excuse me. I have Brother to say, they said that we were prisoners of war. The war has been on. Now, whether we acknowledge it or operate, you know, out of it to others' view, we can't. That's for their perception. That's a perception issue. But the question are they engaged in creating? That's a whole different issue, as far as I see.
When
John Locke said that the capturing of Africans was the act of waging war, we see, and we can use the history of our long view, whether it's the 500 years or the 2,000 years, Africans have been in constant engagement of warfare. Again, if that is not the perception of those who are watching it and watching what we do, that's another issue. But the question of whether we're engaged, I mean, that gets into, can we bring up facts? And I think that we could line up a series of facts that make the position, even if we use the historical fact of Haiti, that we have been engaged in war.
Brother X, I want to thank
Africans have not been engaged in no warfare. They've been engaged in survival. And anybody who is a prisoner of war, just as you said, we are here. When you are a prisoner of war, you're in a penitentiary, they can come in there and slaughter each person whenever they feel like it. We're not engaged in no war here. We're just surviving. And we've been permitted to survive up to this point because we were serving a certain interest at a certain time. That time has passed.
Okay. Brother X, I want to thank you for your call, man.
Thank you, brother.
You know, you hit it on the head, Richard, about we've been engaged in. Listen, our people war has been declared on our people since we were brought here. Since our ancestors were brought to these shores. I think that what we have been lacking, and we can point to those brothers and sisters in history as developing a war strategy. Now, I might be wrong, but I think that a lot of our people, and especially ones that have been in leadership, was lacking in developing some type of war strategy for our people. More and more you see now that is especially younger minds are critically looking at our situation and developing war strategies. You know, the book that Brother Chance wrote, when I told him in the beginning that I've never seen anybody
look at that black talented tenth and explain it the way he did in relation to our situation presently. That book is full of war strategies for our people. It's a lot of people out here that, listen, some of our people don't know how to use critical thinking. They don't. When we were taught in these schools by white folks, that was one of the things that they didn't teach our children, how to think critically on issues. But I think now we have the opportunity, and especially with the advent of social media, to get messages out, to have our people look at these issues, and to have our people critically think about their next moves. And to, you know, for our people to always say that, you know, there's nothing that we can do. I mean, what is this man, some type of almighty creator? Come on here with this, you know, come on. I entertain a lot because it's necessary for our people to talk and to vent. But this man he didn't create this world that we live on. He lives on this planet just like we do. This issue about we can't do this. Listen, as far as I remember, Micah Johnson, the one who went down to Dallas and did what he did, was in the service. He was a service man. All of those black folks that is fighting in these or in the armed forces, all of them ain't no Uncle Toms or Sam Bowles or however you want to characterize them. Even back when, you know, we had the guest on a couple weeks ago, Richard, that was talking about our ancestors that came home from World War I. Some of them men were ready to defend themselves when they got back on these shores.
And did.
So, come on here. Hey, our people ain't going to roll over, bend over, nothing else. Our people ain't never did no rolling over and bending over since they've been in this country. Some of our people need to stop talking that foolishness.
And I see Brother Chance's book as a part of that, identifying the psychological warfare that's going on.
If somebody want to roll over and bend over, they need to get started. Go ahead. Just get out the way. You know, our young people don't want to need to hear all that old type of talk. And I don't want to get, all taken out of the context, but you wind things up for us, Brother Chance. You know, we took you to the limit here. It's 9 o'clock, but I want you to tell the listening audience anything that they need to know, where they can get the book, any other information, if you're going to be in their city, things like that. Go ahead. The floor is yours.
You definitely can get the book at www.mchancespeaks.com. If you're on social media, on Twitter or Instagram, you can follow me at M Chance Speaks, or on Facebook, Mitchell Chance Speaks. You can follow my like page, or on YouTube, Mitchell Chance. I just want to leave with you guys. I read a book by Dr. Joy DeGry. It's called Post-Traumatic Slavery.
Yeah, she was on our program about 3 or 4 times. Go ahead.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's amazing. But what I took from her, from her book, was more than what was in the book. What I took from what she forced me to do was challenge why I think everything that I think. Challenge why I like what I like. Challenge why I dislike what I dislike. Challenge why I gravitate towards some things and away from other things. And get to the truth behind who I am and what's more beneficial for me and for my race. So with my book, they're all to challenge you, but even outside of reading, I implore you to challenge your own thinking, because a lot of how we think has been programmed into us. And when we think we're thinking for ourselves, really somebody else had already programmed us to think like them. So
hey, brother,
I had to go through.
No, no, go ahead, go ahead.
I was going through my phone.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Bill James.
I had to go through my own personal process of introspection and coming to myself saying, why this, why that, why that? And the more we challenge our own thinking, that's when we begin to grow. Because if you don't challenge your own thinking, you are not sure as to why you think what you think. So I make a lot of bold statements in my book, and it's not for me to say I have a monopoly on the truth, but what I'm going to make you do is think
for yourself. And so that's what I want to leave with each and every one of you, is make sure your thoughts are your thoughts and they're not someone else's programs in your mind.
Brother Richard, any last words to Brother Chance before he leaves us?
No, I appreciate it. I just look for you to continue to expand on that, and I think it'll be helpful, especially to go into the 19th century as you develop your premise in relationship to the talented 10th for African thinking.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You know,
thank you guys for having me so much.
And listen, I'm going to be reaching out to you, man, because, you know, we need your perspective, that millennial perspective. You in the local area, Philadelphia area. I'm going to be reaching out to you to be a guest on this program to get your perspective on things. And maybe we can do some more things moving forward as far as your relation to Time for Awakening.
This is my life. I live for this. As the Black Panthers taught, no such thing as a part-time revolution now. So this is my life.
Brother, thanks for being with us this evening. And I'll be in touch.
All right.
We'll be right back. We'll be right back to wind things up.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
No, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you want on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy Black365.com.
Hear the story of the young eagle. Perhaps you've heard it. There was once a farmer who had barnyard of Leghorn chickens, white Leghorn chickens. And one day a friend of his said, you know, you could make some extra money if you would capture an eagle and show him around and charge admission to see him. And so the farmer said, that's a good idea. And he went out and he captured an eagle. But the eagle was too used to freedom. Too used to freedom. And would not be tamed. And he would not hold still. And he fought back. And then his friend said, look, maybe we made a little mistake. Why not use the eggs, the two eggs that this female eagle has laid? And so the farmer said, that's good. And he put the two eggs under a setting hen. And in due time, one of the eggs hatched. And this young eagle came out. He didn't know who he was. So the farmer called him Tom. And he put Tom out with the chickens. And he ran around with the chickens. And he thought he was a chicken, never knowing that he was the king of the birds. And he ran around with the chicken. In due time, he became a little ashamed of his color. See, the other chickens were white. And his feathers were deep bronze. So he put some chicken oil on his feathers, kind of lightened them up a bit. And then he noticed that the feathers on his head stood up, while the chicken's feathers laid down, and he was a little ashamed of that, so he tied a silk rag around his head. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? Well, in due time, the other egg hatched. And when this other egg hatched, he broke bad when he came on set. Farmer called him Turk. Now, somehow, Turk felt that he didn't belong down there running away from the farm every time he stamped his foot. And one morning, very early, he wandered over to the edge of the barnyard, young Turk did, and he looked up into the sky, and there he saw a speck appear. And the speck got closer and closer and closer, and it got to be the largest bird he had ever seen. Of course, you and I know that it was a full-grown eagle, and the eagle came to rest on a branch right above the barnyard and looked down at young Turk and said, what are you doing down there with those chickens? And young Turk said, why, I am a chicken. He said, no, you're not a chicken. You're an eagle. He said, an eagle? What's an eagle? He said, an eagle is the king of the skies. He said, I want you to spread your wings and flap them and come up here beside me, and I want to rap to your wife. So young Turk said, I can't fly that high. You know chickens can't fly that high. And he said, why, you can fly that high. There's nothing that you can do, because it's in your blood and in your bones. Spread your wings. He spread his wings. I flapped them, and he flapped them, and he rose higher and higher. Higher than he'd ever risen before, and he came in on the branch with the old eagle. The eagle says, now settle down here. He said, I want to tell you that your father was a king of the skies. No bird could fly higher nor farther than he could without rest. And your mother was a queen of the skies. She was looked up to and admired by all of the birds of the sky. That's who you are. He said, well, you know, I'm a little ashamed of the color of my feathers. He said, don't you know what that color represents? He said, well, that's royalty. Represents royalty. He said, well, that makes me feel so good, Turk said. He said, but how about the way the feathers on my head stands up? It's different from the other birds down there, the other chickens. So he said, why, don't you know that's your crown? I said that you were a king. He said, this sounds so good. He said, let's tell Uncle Tom. So he said, Uncle Tom, he called him Uncle Tom in deference to his older years. You know, he's a little older. Uncle Tom, and Uncle Tom is busy running around there with his silk rag on his head and so on. And he said, Uncle Tom, this fella's telling us who we are. He's giving us our history. So Uncle Tom said, I don't want to hear anything about our history. I'm too busy eating this good food down here. And besides, you better come down here. You'll get us all in trouble. Said, I don't want to hear any history. So the old eagle said, just forget him. He's too brainwashed. Let us fly away to our destiny. And they took off.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and I want to thank our guest that was with us this evening, activist and author. Brother Mitchell Chance was with us this evening. The book, The Great Hijack, The Stealing of the Black Talented Tenth Through the System of Self-Hate. Again, you can go to mchancespeaks.com. That's mchancespeaks.com. Purchase a copy of the book. Brother Chance has five other books, too. Five other books on the site that you could purchase or might be interested in. Five other interesting titles dealing with our people's empowerment. It was an interesting discussion tonight, Brother Richard. Brother Richard? Brother Richard, are you there? Brother Richard? Mr. Lawrence, Brother Richard. Interesting discussion with our guest tonight. Let me just say this before we go. You know, it's always good when we can bring folks on from all over this country and even outside this country that's doing things to change our paradigm, our people's thinking, and have us look at our situation and develop strategies to move our people forward. It's always good to talk with the listening audience, to hear what people have to say. But, you know, when you have young people on here that are looking at these situations critically, writing about them, Brother Chance is a young man. When you have young people on here looking at these things, doing a critical analysis and writing about it, and then going about doing the activist work of talking to young people, talking to their age groups, talk to anybody that will listen to them about our situation, then we don't need to be saying things that's going to make our people think that their efforts are in vain. If I don't believe that our people can be successful and move our people forward, then maybe sometimes I ought to keep my opinions to myself. Our people didn't come here. Our people weren't no quitters. Our people came from, we just heard the clip that was played. Our people came from royal stock. We were first people on the face of this earth. The Almighty put us here for a reason. White people didn't put us here. They came here much later. I'm not giving them no mantle like they're the Almighty be all and end all. The system of white supremacy is a system that they created. They're human beings. This system is going to fall, and it's eventually going to fall. And I hope I'm a part of the solution of it, the falling of it. I'm not going to tell anybody that their efforts are in vain. Just leave. Just get out of here. Defeat is attitude. No. That type of conversation, we don't need. Young people don't need to be hearing that. No quitters. We don't need to be hearing those type of things. If I can't give encouragement to young people, give them a voice to be able to, a venue to be able to have their voices heard, to be able to express their ideas to elders and young, then I don't need to be saying anything. Sometimes it's good to keep my opinions to myself. Especially if you're seeing them all the time. We can do better than that. We're better than that as a people. Come up with some solutions. If I leave this place, where am I going? The system of white supremacy don't just exist in the United States. Europeans made this a worldwide system, or as much as they could spread it. The system has to be defeated. You can't defeat it by running out. Running where? It's time to stand your ground and fight. Develop the weapons to fight if you don't have them. Develop the weapons to fight. Help somebody else develop the weapons to fight. And a lot of this stuff is going to be mental. Believe me, He defeated our people here in this country by using mental tactics to do it. Sure, there's a lot of brutality mixed in, but a lot of it was mental. And you can see the results of it now. He ain't holding no gun over black folks' head. A lot of this stuff we're doing, that we've been doing is a mentality, a self-hate mentality. We got a stronger mind than this man, and we can use it. We've been taught not to use our mind for a number of years. It's time to start using it. Wake our people up out of this situation. That's what it's all about. It's time for an awakening. Believe me. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back next week, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school.